first observation, given the degree of email traffic, is that 1 hour is too short for any of our future calls. But thank you very much, Avery, for being able to get us in for this 1 hour block today. What I'd like to do, given the short period of time that we have today, is first acknowledge there were a couple of things that we did not reach on our agenda during the last call. Those included Milton's proposal, an initial discussion, as well as the discussion of our drafting process. For purposes of today and the interest of time, I suggest we belay further the discussion of the drafting process and focus on substance. And I wanted to invite Milton to start off with a discussion of his proposal, and then perhaps a follow-up then from people who contributed documents over the course of the weekend, maybe to just acknowledge that everyone has received them. And my suggestion then is perhaps to confirm the options that Philip has revised for us, because I think they set a good sort of universe of potential discussions, and then perhaps start to narrow where you guys really want to focus. I see one of the challenges is every issue seems to have several tangents to it, and I think you need to decide fairly quickly whether you're going to discuss the broader piece or something a little bit more focused. We probably still have another call or two before that completely narrows into a draft document, but I'd like folks to start thinking about where they want us to arrive over the next several hours of various calls and meetings. Does that make any sense, or are there any objections to that?
Philippe, just if I may, I sent, maybe you haven't had a chance to read it, I just recently sent an email called Baselines, which I thought might be useful to get under our belt to make sure that all our starting positions are clear to each other, albeit it doesn't mean we have to accept those going forward. And I thought it would be useful on this call to validate that, perhaps more so than we, if time is a problem, than looking again at my revised paper, although I think a lot of the things I've said on that revised paper are actually part of the email discussion we've had in other areas. So I think there's a lot of overlapping good stuff rather than more stuff.
I think that's a great suggestion. Anybody else?
This is just your short email, is it, Philip?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the message you sent at 9:25 Eastern time today. Milton, first I'd just like to confirm where you would like to go. We did not get to you on the agenda last time, and still hanging out there is a discussion of your initial proposal that now Steve has reacted to, but I wanted to respect and make sure that we had the chance to talk about that, because we had agreed on that on the last call.
Sure, I'd be happy to to continue.
Yeah,
Hello?
Yeah, that would be great, and then we will, as Philip suggested, I think, confirm where folks sit in terms of the various proposals.
Oh, okay, if that's all we're going to do, I am assuming then that my proposal is out there and you know what's in it, so we could proceed directly to Philip's suggestion if other people other than myself and Philip think that's a good way to proceed.
This is John. Could I make a suggestion? Robert, I think maybe we, we have an hour today. I'm thinking maybe the next meeting we go through all the proposals that are out there and then maybe some new ones that might come up. If we start taking the proposals and discussing them at different times, it might be more efficient to just do them all together. We know what Milton's proposal is. It's a 4455, right? But when evaluating that one versus some of the others that are out there, and Steve's amendment to Philip to Milton's proposals out there, it might be easier and again more efficient if we just have proposal day and try to get all the proposals out there and today talk about the substantive issues. Why is X in a, why might we see something in a proposal? Why should we see something in a proposal? Steve's been mentioning differing voting thresholds depending on, the various issues. Let's explore that and some other substantive topics versus diving into the proposals right now. At least that would be my suggestion.
I would agree with that. Could I ask that when we get to that stage next time, we have all the proposals on a single sheet, so we'll make sure we're all talking off the same page?
Sure, we'll work to, if folks can get those in to us with a maybe a shutdown period of 2 or 3 hours before the call, then I can pull that together.
Thanks.
John, sounds like you had an excellent suggestion that folks are happy with, so why don't we do that? There were a number of issues that came up over the course of the weekend in a variety of emails. I won't pretend to give any one priority over the other, so would we like to start a queue?
Well, I would still like to hear how people respond to Philip's question.
Okay. And since you, do you have a reaction yourself, Nelson?
Yeah, I did react on the list. I said that we have preferred solutions and we have acceptable solutions, and based on the fact that I don't know what alternatives are going to be in front of us in the end, I could not say that the BGC baseline was completely unacceptable. In other words, we wouldn't commit hiri-kari, but it's certainly not our preferred solution at the moment.
Okay, thank
okay. you. This is Aubrey.
Aubrey?
Right, since I guess in his email, everyone else's position was sort of projected already except for mine, I should say that I have seen absolutely no reason to move away from the 4x4+3, base recommendation that the working group came out with. So I guess I would still be in the position one, that the 4x4+3 is the best proposal offered so far.
John, I'd note, given the first two comments, that we're beginning to move away from substance.
That's fine from a baseline, and I have okay. no concerns with that.
Right. It's Alan. Could I be in the list also?
Certainly, Alan. You're the only one on the list.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, Rob, my suggestion was really that we simply went round each party to simply say, yes, what I had posited on that email was correct or not. It's just to clarify understanding, because we haven't, on this round of discussions yet, said we made assumptions about what is acceptable, but we haven't specifically said it. It was simply a clarifying thing that should take, no more than a minute. We don't need to say any more than that, and it doesn't change.
So that's why I commented that I thought it was incomplete.
Exactly, yes, yes. I mean, Avery's reaction was what I expected, if you like, of everybody to say.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Philip. I was just acknowledging that given the number of emails that came through and folks' various schedules, I did the queue method, so I didn't put anybody on the spot who might be quickly still looking it up and wanting to take a look at it. So after Alan, Philip, we know your slot. You assume these are correct. Alan, your slot?
Can I just clarify before we do this to try and get it into three categories? And I think Milton's approach was quite useful. There is totally rejected, let's say preferred and non-optimum. If we could get it in those categories, we know where there's any leeway.
Would non-optimum
so in other words, not just yes or no. I'd like a third category, which is non-optimal. I think Milton said some are classified as preferred and some are essential. So I'd just like to know where the middle ground is as well.
This is Steve. Could I get in the queue at some point?
Sure, Steve. Let me step back just real quickly to make sure that we all have the same terminology. Your original terminology, Milton, was preferable and acceptable. Tony, you wanted to add an additional one, which is totally reject.
Yes.
Well, no, it just means unacceptable there.
Okay. All right.
Yes, that's right.
All right. in that case, let's step back very quickly, and under the assumption of Philip that this can be a 1 minute per person item. Milton, let's start again with you, just to review so that everyone understands. Just go through one and two and say preferred, accepted, or preferred, acceptable, or unacceptable.
Okay, one and two is mine and Steve Metellus's.
That is correct.
I thought we were talking about the BGC proposal.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, BGC baseline is not preferred, but conceivably could be acceptable. And joint users proposal is acceptable.
You mean preferred?
Preferred, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
And Aubrey, can you just read?
Sure. Number one is preferred. The joint users, I think at this point, especially since I'm understanding it, to preclude NOMCOM appointees, would find completely unacceptable.
It actually was a joint users proposal as written, which was silent on NOMCOM because it said it should refer to outcome of the review.
Right, yeah, but the implication is coming forward that it really does intend to eliminate NOMCOM, sees no purpose for them, etc. So, it's already a problem because of parity, but eliminating NOMCOM, I also, from the things I've said, you know, in the mails, I think this confounding of users and registrants' interests is problematic, so I'd have to say no.
Thank you. Alan?
I'm also in the state where three words don't cover it. I'm
feel free to extend to
a I support Avery's comment on NOMCOM, and either of the proposals is not acceptable to us. Unless it's clear that users have a reasonable seat at the table. I understand any user can go buy a domain for $8 or $10 and through a sham cover the detail terms. That's not our preference.
Thank you.
Alan, sorry, I don't quite understand your response there. You're saying that the proposal supported by the at-large is no longer supportable by you?
No. What I'm saying is either of them are supportable with different levels of preference if it's made clear that we're talking about users.
Ah, okay.
Not I have to go back to for direction from my okay. Constituency.
But the joint user proposal is...
Just to be clear,
we're talking about users.
They're both acceptable. Is that what you're saying in terms of the three categories?
With the caveat about NOMCOM, they are both acceptable, not necessarily preferred.
Thank you.
Assuming we're talking about users, we have a preference for number two because we were part of it. We are part of it, but the user discussion is something separate from that proposal. In fact,
thank you, Alan. Phil, you were next in terms of a previous queue in terms of speaking order.
BGC proposal not acceptable, joint users preferred.
Thank you. Tony, you were next in the queue.
So that's exactly the same. The BGC is unacceptable and the 3366 is preferred.
Thank you. Steve, you were next.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. That reflects my constituency's position. Of course, my constituency has sent me to this group to try to achieve a consensus, but our current position is that the BGC proposal is not acceptable and the joint users proposal is preferred.
Thank you. Chuck?
I think Philip characterized it pretty well in his email. So I don't know if there's anything to add. I think that, in an email I sent just shortly before the meeting, I think that in all of these things, one of the things we're failing to look at is when these things would come into place, because in some cases there's some huge unknowns if we were to implement the structure the way it's proposed.
Just preferred or unacceptable, please, Chuck.
My interpretation of your comments, Chuck, is that Phillips is correct, and therefore, under your reading, the joint users, at least for purposes of this straw man, is unacceptable.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I have a question of a point of order. I thought at the end of the last meeting, it was basically accepted that the registrars and registries could not be put together, and therefore that proposal. Hold it. Sorry.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the wrong one. I withdraw.
Okay, John?
The board governance committee proposal is preferred, and the joint user proposal is unacceptable.
Thank you. All right, Philip. I think that has given us the baseline.
Super. Yeah, that's what I want to do. Thanks so much.
Sure. John, you had raised the point of wanting to keep away from, you know, proposals for the purpose of this call and have proposal day. You had contributed to the group the chart that showed the different breakdowns of voting thresholds, and in the spirit of wanting to touch base on what folks had contributed and also to expand the substantive discussion you suggested, perhaps you can lead us off on just a quick review of what you provided and where you'd like it to go.
Sure. I provided a chart through a review of the ICANN bylaws and the JNSU annex. And if you look at the chart, essentially there are different voting thresholds depending on the type of vote along the policy development process. So to create an issues report, essentially start the policy development process, it requires 25% of members present. And so I tried to be clear between members present and members. So 25% of those participating in the meeting. Of course, some of the differential might go away with absentee voting if that goes forward. Initiate a PDP is 33% of members at a meeting. And unless it's determined by the ICANN staff that it's not within the scope of the PDP process, and then it would require a two-thirds vote. Appointing a task force requires a majority vote of the members at the meeting. Approval of a PDP final report requires 66% to get supermajority, or a simple majority to pass it on to the board without a supermajority vote. If the board sends it back to the GNSO, and the GNSO has the right to offer a supplemental recommendation, and the same voting thresholds apply in that case. As far as elections of the chair of the GNSO, it's a simple majority. In board seats 13 and 14, simple majority. There's a provision for removal of a non-com counselor, and it's a 75% requirement of vote of all members. And then all other GNSO business is a simple majority.
Thank you. From anybody's sense in terms of comments, you'll recall that one of the themed agreed upon areas of discussion, or at least where there was room for further discussion during our last meeting, was this concept of potentially different thresholds for different votes or different matters. Does that continue to be the sense of the group, and is there any value in discussing that a little bit today or some other topic?
Philip, to comment?
Yes, sir, you're first in the queue.
Okay. I thought the analysis was very useful. I would counsel us not to spend too much time on the first bits to do with PDP votes and kicking them all off, because to some extent all that lot's going to be revised and looked at as part of our new process discussions, and the rationale behind a lot of that was simply, you know, somebody comes up with an idea, do we think we need to at least understand it better and move forward, and things like the task force votes, etc., have in fact been turned on their head by recent practice. But for me, I think what it did suggest is that if my assumption is correct, which is that the real thing that matters to the contract parties about votes on the GNSO are when consensus policy hits and everything else is secondary, then my contention is that should be the direction we look at moving in order to see if by doing something special on that we can get agreement to increase the representation of the users groups. I mean, that would be my contention as to a useful path to follow.
Chuck, on the queue, please.
Okay.
John.
Steve.
Okay. And I'll expand after you guys. Okay, Chuck.
Okay, yeah, and there's been some good exchange on this on the email list. Granted, the consensus policy issues are critical, but everything else we do, including elections, really all is related. You can't totally separate it from even the little who is work that's going on right now could eventually sometime relate to consensus policy. So I'm not sure you can totally separate it. And the bottom line is the GNSO is a policy development body, and the goal is to try and develop consensus policy. So everything we do in some way or another relates to that.
Thank you, Chuck. Was that all your comments?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. You sort of just dropped off at the end. Thank you. John?
Yeah, I also put it on the list, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. But essentially, the scope of the GNSO is policy development. So in my eyes, every vote that is taken relates to the policy development process.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, thanks. I think the last two comments are very helpful clarifications, because we're not here. It's clear that we're not just concerned with contracting parties being bound to something that they oppose in terms of a contractual obligation. The contracting parties are now saying that they have a right not to be outvoted on any matter that comes before the GNSO Council, no matter what it is. And I think it's helpful to have that clarification, because I think there are ways to assuage the concerns about contracted parties being bound to something that they oppose, bound in as a contractual matter. I think it's going to be much more difficult to reach consensus on the demand we've just heard from the registrars and registries, that they have a guarantee that they will never be outvoted on any matter that comes before the GNSO. Okay?
John,
Leah, this is Avery. Can I get in the queue on that?
And Alan.
Avery.
I just want to respond to that, because it was a total mischaracterization of what I said.
I agree.
So,
that's,
you know, just for the record, that was an absolute 180 degree from what I said. My point is that everything that the GNSO scope under the bylaws is related to policy development process. And the policy development process leads to binding consensus policy on registries and registrars. Also, I think Steve mentioned something about having more say than other parties when we're just looking for parity.
We don't have that now, and it's not in the BGC proposal. So, Steve, I'm not sure how you got what you did out of what we said.
Well, I'd be glad to respond, or else you can continue with the queue, Rob, as you prefer.
Avery and Alan, can Steve step in and respond?
Fine with me.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Steve, and then Avery and then Alan.
Yeah, I mean, it's true that the GNSO Council does may have some relationship to policy development, but just take a look at the votes, for example, that the staff compiled on this list of 28 votes, and you know, in some cases the connection with policy development is rather attenuated, you know, on absentee voting, on confirming the vice chair of the council, on letter on travel funding. These have some relationship to PDP, and certainly it's true of the WHOIS studies. It could have some relationship to PDP. That's why we're talking about having WHOIS studies, so that hopefully we can make better decisions on PDP. But there's a big difference in my mind between a vote that may have some relationship in the future to PDP and the question of are the contracting parties going to be forced to comply in their contracts with a policy with which they fundamentally disagree. That's why we have the supermajority requirement, it seems to me, on final step on PDP. And that's why I would certainly support a modification of the joint users proposal to make it clear that a supermajority cannot be achieved if there is absolutely no support from the contracted parties. But to me, there's a big difference between that and everything else, and to say that, that we need to have parity or the inability to have a majority vote on other issues, I think that's a huge leap.
Thank you, Steve. Aubrey?
Okay, yeah. I mean, a lot of it just got covered. I did not hear in any of the proposals from, the BGC that it in any way gave anyone a insurmountable lead in everything. First of all, for the most part, the people within the council do vote independently. Sometimes there are block votes. As long as there's a BGC formula for the 4x4 plus 3 is maintained, there's parity within the constituencies, and there is an offsetting vote, and as the vote statistics show, those votes are indeterminate and don't go directly with either block of constituencies. We've also seen over time many different times where the non-commercials and the commercials had different intents and voted differently. So to say that having parity of the non-NOMCOM votes gives somebody a guarantee that they can win all votes and have a majority in all votes is just doesn't sink.
And
can I get
in
the queue?
Add me to the queue, Chuck.
Milton.
Certainly. Thanks, Milton and Chuck. And but first, Alan.
The last two speakers said everything I need to say.
Thank you, Milton.
I think Steve's point may have been overstated, but there's a kernel of validity in it, namely that if what the supplier constituencies are concerned about is having contractual obligations imposed on them, that the voting distribution of the council, many of the votes simply don't pertain to these consensus policy obligations. Oh, who was that? So I think it's a valid point. If there's some way to hive off the, let's call them the fearsome votes, put them in a different category without making every single vote ever taken by the council have this 50% supplier constituencies, then that might be one way towards a solution.
Could you add me to the queue, please?
Certainly, Tony. Thanks, Milton. Chuck, you're next.
Okay. I thought somebody else jumped in ahead of me, but maybe not. Let's look at the numbers, because I'm confused why people are thinking that the registries and registrars want to have this superpower. In the BGC proposal, the registrars have 21.1% of the votes. The registries have 21.1% of the vote. That's 42.1% of the vote. How does that give us any super edge in terms of that? It doesn't. What am I missing here?
A rhetorical question or specifically?
Oh, I'd love to have an answer. I don't. People are talking like we're asking for some huge power in the votes. It doesn't check out numerically.
Can I maybe try and answer that a little bit?
Sure.
Thank you, Tony, because you're next in line.
Okay. I mean, I think the point is here, Chuck. If you look at it, the only way that the other parties could ever get a parity of votes with that level from the business sector is to all vote together. And this has been one of the contentious issues, I think, from that broader business sector, because it puts us in a position where we're forced to do that even to get parity. So that's part of the problem. The other issue is, if you then build on top of it the remarks from Avery, well, if on the policy development issues, then the broader business community and the suppliers are always going to be at odds with each other, or let's say in cases where they are at odds, you're almost reaching a stage where you say, well, they needn't bother to participate, because at the end of the day, the votes go to the other players who are outside of those two communities to decide. And Avery's point was that they can vote one way or the other, and if you look, they probably have. But I don't think that that is the correct resolution of this situation. And I believe that we probably do need to look at some of these issues around the actual weighted voting in terms of, I used the term wrongly, I didn't mean weighted voting. What I actually meant was the thresholds to get a vote through and a vote passed. And as part of that, is there any view that we could look to separate out maybe the votes that do affect policy development process and those votes that have little to do with that? In other words, where there are issues where the suppliers feel that something could get mandated on them through that process, can we segregate out at an early stage what those issues are and then maybe look at those two things separately?
Can I respond to that?
Yes, sir. There's no one in the
queue. And I'm not responding for John here because I can't do that, but I'm not opposed to exploring that further. The fact that I said that just everything we do relates to policy doesn't mean that there's not room to explore those areas. So I'm not at all opposed to that.
Thanks, John. I'm happy to talk about thresholds. I think that it makes sense to talk about it. You know, is 25% correct? Is 33% correct for different functions? Is simple majority correct for depending on the function, or two-thirds?
Philip, have a comment?
Yes, Philip, please.
Okay, thanks. I think it's been a useful discussion. The reason for my opening the question was that I wanted to know if it was going to be productive for us to talk about thresholds. And for me, what I mean by productive is, can we see movement in terms of additional seats for users, and the deal for that is looking at adjusting thresholds so that those additional seats do not allow the imposition of unreasonable burdens by the votes that they would entail upon policy-related matters. I want to know if that's a productive route to go down. So we're not looking at in abstract at thresholds. We're looking at thresholds on votes to do with policy, with a deal to be done on improving seats, because otherwise there's no point in going down that particular furrow at all. And if we don't go down that route, I'm frankly at a loss to know what else we can do. But I wanted to be clear that that was why I'm proposing it, and that's why it would be a productive discussion, that is at the back of people's minds, that such a deal could be done.
If I could respond, from my perspective, I think the flip would be the productive discussion point, where you stick with the proposal of the BGC, and if thresholds are something that would give more comfort by, you know, essentially lowering the thresholds, is something I'm happy to talk about.
Reactions, comments to John's statement.
Can I go to the queue? It's Tony.
Yes, Tony, you're the only one in the queue, so you're up.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify the last remark in the right way. And what I understood it to say was that we could have that discussion, but the starting point is around the BGC proposal, because I don't think that was something that everybody subscribed to. But did I understand that remark correctly?
Just to clarify, the way I understood Philip's comment was that we would discuss thresholds in the context of changing the actual number of voting entities or voting parties. And the converse is the same, where we could discuss thresholds in the context of keeping the proposal as it is and discussing thresholds as well. It's just the inverse of the same thing Philip said. At least that's
right.
I think, Philip, just a comment. I mean, frankly, Donnie, it makes no difference if we're taking BGC votes and adding to them on the user side, or we're taking other proposals and taking away from them. I'm just saying...
It makes a huge difference for both of us, I'm sure.
Yeah. Avery, can I get in?
Yes, Avery. I heard you had some mute problems there, so you're now...
Yeah, and basically, I think if we just look at that, we have a formal proposal on the table, which is the BGC proposal, and that we basically should be talking off variants of that. So if we are going to start with something like this, it only, you know, and if we are going to take that differentials approach, then it makes sense that we have to take that differentials approach from the standing proposal that was approved by the working group and the committee. So it makes sense to follow the pattern that was being suggested by John.
Well,
Steve
will be in the queue. Yeah, just a quick observation from the moderator's perspective, whose opinion doesn't really matter anyway, is that wasn't that your attempt, Milton? Your compromise parity proposal sort of took a stab at that original 4-4-4 effort, and then you suggested modifications to it. Is that correct?
That's right. I was basically, from my point of view, the two proposals on the table were the joint users proposal and the board governance committee's proposal, and I simply tried to come into the middle of them and offer a compromise that I thought might be welcomed by people who couldn't converge on one or the other.
Okay, thank you. Steve, you were in the queue.
Yeah, just to say that I don't think it's correct that there's just one proposal on the table. I think there were two when we started. Now there's several more. So it's just not correct to say there's one proposal that has some official standing and the others don't.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to?
Yeah, this is Aubrey.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Aubrey. Thanks.
Yeah, I think Steve's right. There are many proposals on the table, but I think only one of them has official standing.
Official being what? How to find how?
Being the BGC committee approved it and sent it to the board. It you're right. It doesn't have final board approval yet, but it has the board governance committee. And then the working group approved it, sent it to the governance committee. The governance committee approved it, sent it to the board. The board then took in comments, took them seriously, is listening. There are many other proposals on the table, but only one of them has been voted on and sent to the board. And that, to me, is official, is as official as anything we in the council have ever done. We decide things and send them to the board. They decided and sent it to the board.
Could I join the queue, please?
And Philip also.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Alan.
Milton.
Thank you. Let's start with Tony, Philip, Alan, and Milton. Tony?
Okay, I find it hard to accept that statement because I don't think that in terms of this debate we're having here in the group that's been set up by the board has any more standing than any other proposal. They didn't refer that to us specifically, and I think that it's up to this group to consider whatever proposals are put forward, and I don't accept that any one approach has any more standing than any of the others.
Thanks, Tony. Philip?
My interpretation is that the board has actually rejected that proposal until such time as it adopts it. That's precisely our job. So I don't think it helps for any of us to try to move to one position or the other in terms of a starting point. That was not the intention of my original proposal. What I wanted to know was if the concept of trading seats for voting thresholds to do a policy was a way forward for our group.
Thank you, Philip. Alan?
I guess I feel very uncomfortable with Avery's position, saying that one position, one proposal is more official than others. If we were at some level of closure, we wouldn't be on this committee. We wouldn't be having these discussions. The idea is to come up with some level of proposal, whether it's a structure different from one of the ones we've seen already or a voting threshold case that is going to be acceptable to everyone. And putting labels on the proposal as official or non-official, I don't think is helpful at this point.
Thank you, Alan. Milton?
I guess most of what needs to be said has been said, but my point was that this is not really a productive discussion because the Board Governance Committee, or the Board, has ordered us to come to an agreement. So the official proposal, as far as we're concerned, is whatever we can agree upon. I understand what Avery is saying about the BGC proposal, but I really think that has served as a kind of needless diversion. We need to come up with something we can agree on, and telling somebody that the BGC proposal is official or more official doesn't produce agreement, as far as I can see.
No, can I respond to this? This is Avery.
Yes.
All I was trying to argue is that if we are stuck having to choose between which is the starting point for discussing how votes are traded for thresholds, it made sense to start with that one. I wasn't saying that one was, I mean, we were basically at an impasse on those one. You know, we had one set of people saying we start with the 6633, and we have another group say we start with 4x4 plus 3, and you know, where do we start? And so we're at the same dividing point that we're always at, and so therefore, how do we pick which one we start from? And I was trying to give a reason why one might be better placed as a starting position than the others.
Thank you, Avery. Does anyone else have any comments on this particular point? I think, well, go ahead. Anybody? I'm sorry, I thought I had heard someone raise a point. Well, Philip, we're back to your point, which I think has some consensus among the group, and that is a willingness to discuss the various thresholds. The challenge becomes sort of where do we start with that? We've got two. To a certain extent, we have Milton's, which is the middle ground. I don't know if that makes some sense.
Robert, this is John. I think you might be mixing up voting thresholds and votes. I don't think I've heard any proposals on voting thresholds, and that may be an area of topic of conversation.
Sorry, John, my proposal was entirely voting thresholds.
Right, exactly. But he just talked about Milton's proposal.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I was just...
But voting thresholds have to be in relation to any given proposal.
Exactly.
Yeah, but we're
kind of speaking in a vacuum, so perhaps we have the... on proposal day, we'll have the discussion based on number of votes and potential thresholds within a proposal.
If you all feel that it would not be productive to spend the last 12 minutes debating where to start, I would agree with John's sense that it may be better to say we have an agreement that we're going to discuss thresholds and that you can save the debate over proposals to our next call, which should be much longer than an hour.
Okay. I would agree with that. I think we can be fairly. I mean, there aren't actually that many options that if you're taking BGC as one extreme and joint users as the other, then the number of horse traded seats in between and thresholds is actually not huge. I think we can probably see all those options and discuss them productively. Would people be happy about talking briefly about my idea about board seats and rotation in the last few minutes of this to see if there's any traction there also?
Sure.
Not hearing an objection, please proceed, Phil.
Okay. We talked briefly on our last call about maybe the idea of users and contract parties rotate in some way, board seats, etc. Thinking about that a bit further and how it might work, it struck me that led to a number of problems in terms of almost appointment of board seats, which is not quite in the philosophy. So thinking it through, it struck me that probably a more appropriate mechanism may be a rotation of nominations. And so, for example, in even years, the users would nominate a candidate. In odd years, the contract parties would nominate a candidate. And then the vote takes place in the normal way, and the board members are still expected to be acceptable to the whole of the JNSO and indeed be required to exercise their collegiate board responsibility. And I wondered what the reaction of the group to that proposal would be.
I'll be happy to take it.
Mrs. John, could you explain that a little further? When you say nominate, what do you have in mind?
Yeah, well, whenever it starts, okay, this year, I suppose it's a user's turn, okay? So out of any of the users' groups, whatever they may be, they and they alone would come forward with one or 25 nominations for the board seat election for that year. And then voting would take place in the normal way, and whoever wins. The following year, the nomination of one or 25 people will be from the sides of the registries and registrars, and then voting takes place in the normal way, and whoever wins.
Okay. Can I get in the queue, Sean?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's one option. I'd equate that, and this is a U.S.-based thinking. You have certain areas, geographic areas in the United States, where it's only really one party that controls those states or those counties or cities, and the real election is in the primary, not in the general election. So that would be a similar situation where the primary election probably would be where the decision is made, and then it's just put forward for a vote in the general election. Another way to think about that, or another concept, would be instead of having each group nominate each year, but try to achieve some kind of consensus with the total group by using criteria. So maybe one year or one seat, must come from a user group, and one seat must come from a supplier group. But you still have the entire body voting on who would fit that seat. So you have a better chance of getting a consensus builder appointed or elected to those seats versus then it's, someone's being thrust upon you. So, think of the worst supplier that you could think of as the least congenial and least collegial and least acceptable to others. The suppliers wouldn't be able to put that person through because it would be a decision based on the entire body, not just the one side, for lack of a better term.
Add Chuck to the queue, please.
And Steve.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Chuck, go ahead.
Somebody was
ahead of me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that. Sorry, Matt.
Yeah, I think Philip's suggestion is very reasonable, and I think John is kind of misinterpreting it here. My understanding is that only the nominations would come from the user side or the supplier side, and it would be impossible to say that the winner of that primary would be the winner of the general election, because the two user groups are not exactly seeing eye to eye on all of these issues, right? So to say that the non-commercials and the commercials can nominate, and then we have a general election in which the suppliers participate, I think this is a really fair and quite reasonable suggestion that is much better than the quota system that Avery dubbed the other suggestion, which was to have only one separate election, segregated elections, if you will, for the different constituencies.
This is Avery.
I'm sorry, this is John. If I could just reply, because maybe I misunderstood, but I thought Philip said the nominations could be one or 25. So that's why I assume.
But what I'm saying is it needn't be any one nomination. There could be multiple nominations. It comes from whatever side.
But the nominations would come from a side. So my point is that that side could nominate one candidate, and that's.
And
it.
you think that the
I'm thinking more
commercial and non-commercial would it come up with the same candidate?
It could be, or more apt from your side is that we could come up with one candidate that you find totally unacceptable, and we nominate one candidate.
Yeah, but can I ask the board a question again?
I'll let Aubrey ask the question, then I note that Chuck and Steve are next in the queue.
Okay, my boring question is the one I always ask in some form or other. Would the NomCom people ever be able to nominate someone?
In my scenario, yes, absolutely.
Okay, we'll throw them in with the suppliers.
Or maybe they can nominate someone on either side.
That's okay to me, too.
And so you always have the wild card in there.
But even, you see, the thing I have to say about this idea of nominating one candidate from the registries, sorry to put it this way, John, but that sounds a lot to me what's been happening for the past 5 years.
No, I think you're missing my proposal, so I'll lay it out in writing so you'll have a better sense of what I'm saying, because you're certainly not capturing what I'm trying to portray.
Given our time frame, that might be a great suggestion, John, to do that in writing. Thanks. I've got Chuck and Steve still in the queue.
Well, first of all, let me say that I think this is an area where we can work together and come up with some reasonable solutions. I'm not necessarily advocating Philip's suggestion the way it is, but if, Philip, you did add later then that maybe there's more than one candidate. That may be also something that we could consider. If one side or nominations come from one particular group or whatever, maybe it needs to be more than one candidate. Otherwise, we get into a situation where, okay, you nominate one, and then it doesn't get approved, and then we go back and forth. I don't know. I do think this is an area where we can work together.
Works in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
It's also worked in the recent history of TNSO, but let's not go down that route.
Steve, you're next in the queue.
Yeah, just to say, I think...
Can you add me to the queue as well, please?
Yes, Tony.
I think Phillips is a good suggestion, and I also look forward to seeing John's. And one way you might think about, you might combine this with a consideration of thresholds. If one side nominates one candidate, perhaps you want to have a threshold for election of the candidate that requires that candidate also get some support from the other side. So if the suppliers put forward one name, set the bar so that that person can't be elected without some votes from the user side.
Yeah, I like that.
Tony, you're next in the queue.
Excuse me, Ms. Average Aria joins now the conference.
I just wanted to add that I'm happy to talk about that, but I think the whole thing needs to be balanced against the discussion around thresholds, the way Steve said, but it also needs to be balanced against the way the voting process would work, because I think that a lot of this is coupled with the issue of who gets to vote and how many votes as well. And I think this is an area we can probably have some reasonable dialogue around, linking those two things together. So maybe we need the proposals set out in writing to make sure that we all understand what's being put forward, and then I think the discussion around thresholds and voting arrangements should follow on from that. It's difficult to do it at the moment without understanding the proposition in detail.
Thank you, Tony. I think that's an excellent sort of summary as we get to the end of this call. Does anyone else want to make any final comments or statements?
It's Alan, just a very quick comment. As we've been talking, I've been putting down the various schemes and trying to figure out what is required to vote for or vote against at the various thresholds, and I think a table like that is useful. In other words, with the BGC proposal, it takes 7 votes to vote against a constituency, making something a consensus policy. And understanding what the numbers are and how it relates to the size of each group, I think, helps. So trying to quantitize the thresholds, not as percentages, but number of votes, I think is useful.
Great. Well, thank you.
The problem with that, Alan, is some of the votes are based on the number of present at a meeting. But, yeah, I think it would be helpful to see if everyone were in attendance.
I think,
what would the actual number be? That, I think that would be helpful.
Well,
this is Aubrey on that one. I think at the moment, without the peers, except for the voting that's done in a voting system, you know, and that's voting for reps, voting for chairs, everything is people at a meeting. It's only things that are done by email voting that it becomes everyone a council. But at the moment, without the absentee voting, all votes are who's present.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's accurate in a couple cases. One, removal of a non-com council, you need 75% of all members, regardless if they're present or not. So in order to hit that, let's say there are 27 votes, you would need 3/4 of 27, regardless of who's at the meeting.
Oh, okay. That's going to be done by a ballot also, though. That's a voting. That's probably by a ballot, I bet.
Yeah, and I'm not sure of the process we would need to do that, but you would need 21 votes to do that.
Right.
And
yeah, but that would be the same as voting in a chair or voting out a council member.
Sure.
I mean, voting in a board member.
Isn't it fair to assume that absentee voting is going to happen, too, so this will change a little bit?
Let's hope.
In the board's hand.
Well, thank you all very much for participating, Aubrey. I know this was a tight fit for you and your schedule today. Four quick points, I guess, to summarize is that there wasn't any consensus on, you know, essentially we're going to start in terms of a voting proposal, BGC versus joint users, but since everyone is going to be submitting or people are invited to submit their proposals prior to proposal meeting, which I suggest should be our next meeting, that may take care of itself. Secondly, there was no consensus on the number of votes. There were several statements made indicating that no one was wedded to the numbers in the BGC proposal or the joint users, and I think, Philip, you in fact mentioned that there was an interest on your part in there being more votes, so that seems to be very fluid at the moment. Where there was consensus is on there being ripe, fruitful discussions in the area of thresholds of voting, and also in the area of board seats and whether that be rotation or voting for the board. So that's two positive developments, I think, that you all have achieved on this call today. Any other final statements that anyone would like to make?
Do we have a date and time for the next meeting?
Right.
It looks like Glenn will have to get creative with some of you as I look at the doodle list. Thursday the 10th does look like a very good possibility with the understanding that Chuck, Milton, and Aubrey have issues.
I'd like to clear that up. My Thursday dinner engagement was canceled, so my Thursday from 6 p.m., I'll still be in Europe then, is more open than it used to be.
Great. Well, perhaps...
I've sent out a new doodle, perhaps, and it is for Thursday, giving people different options.
Great. Yeah. Let's all focus on that then.
Yeah, I didn't have any issues on the 10th. I'm not sure what I put forward, but...
You were yellow for that day. So.
Yeah, I think that was my problem with the system, yeah.
Okay, well, maybe, Glenn, you can work directly with Aubrey on that because she's the only other yellow.
Yeah.
Great, yeah, thank you.
Okay.
I submitted two because I realized the first time I did everything.
You're covering all bases, Chuck.
Yeah.
Thank you all very much, and we'll look forward to a number of continued email dialogues, particularly proposals. And let's shoot, if we can, for a bigger block of time on that Thursday, maybe 2 hours. Do you think that or an hour and a half, if you think that would be helpful?
I think we'll need two.
Okay.
Or
seven.
You're standing comments, Steve, about after an hour and 15 minutes, things get less productive.
Well, if you wear enough people down, we can come to closure.
Thank you all very much. We'll
Thanks,
talk
Rob.
On Thursday.
Thanks,
everybody.
Thanks, Rob.
Bye. Bye-bye.